here's the sort of the abstract thing. So you've got our sender. It's Julius Caesar or you buying from Amazon. You've got a plain text message, you know, attack at dawn, retreat at dawn, okay, retreat at dawn, or your credit card number. And this little box here is your private space, you know, you and your computer or whatever. You've got security within this box, right? You know, there are all kinds of other forms of attack where you have to worry about people with telescopes looking through the window and seeing where your fingers are on the keyboard. We're assuming that, you know, that we're not under attack that way. So you control everything. So you take this and using a key, you encrypt it and you create a ciphertext, some random string like this, which is the encrypted version of retreat at dawn, and you send it now to a receiver who has the same key and uses the key to decrypt the ciphertext and turn it into the plain text message, which is identical to what you started with. Okay, this is insecure. All of this part in this space here between the two boxes, you know, maybe halfway around the world or halfway across Gaul or whatever it is. That's the part you can't control. So that's the model. The worry is that there is an attacker. We're going to use some stock figures here. So here's Alice. Alice is going to be always the sender. Bob is always going to be the receiver. And the attacker is known as Eve. Eve, the evil eavesdropper. Okay? So Eve, the worry is that Eve, that's supposed to be a horn with which she's listening in on the path here, and she's figuring out. We want to make sure that this jumble is not interpretable by Alice. And the example we just gave, if that Chaucerian or Middle English crypto system were in use, is, you know, there's enough information just in the letter frequencies of the ciphertext to decrypt it, even if you don't know, without knowing the key. So that's considered a weak cipher, a not very effective cipher. Cracking ciphers has been an art for almost as long as making ciphers has been done. And in particular, this method of doing frequency analysis has been known since the 9th century. This is the mathematician Al-Kindi in what? This is a Syrian stamp, actually. I think Al-Kindi was actually in what we would now know as Iraq. This is where a lot of the best mathematical work in the Middle Ages was being done. And he wrote a manuscript on how to decipher substitution ciphers by frequency counting. This was completely understood by the year 900. This is died in 873. The thing we just described. But people have been kept on using substitution ciphers for centuries afterwards. So here's poor Mary Queen of Scots. Does anybody know the story of Mary Stuart?
Mary Queen of Scots.
Anybody know? Mary Queen of Scots and her cousin Elizabeth, Queen Elizabeth. It's a great story. There's a terrific book called Simon Sings the Code Book, which I think I've got somewhere listed on the course website, which tells this story, you know, in great detail. So you know, Mary Queen of Scots was imprisoned by Elizabeth for plotting against her, and she tried to smuggle messages out of her cell by encrypting them using a substitution cipher and then hiding them in, I forget what do you remember, Trevor? Where did she hide her messages? I can't remember.
It was food or something.
I forget what this
I don't remember where.
But she developed the cipher. which apparently the people on the other side that she was communicating with always knew. Some of it were actually, some of the things she was encrypting were whole words rather than single letters, but it was basically a substitution cipher. And these messages were intercepted, decrypted by frequency analysis. She was found to be treasonous and in a very celebrated, famous execution was was beheaded. Anyway, it's an important historical story as well as a quite dramatic example of how technologies keep being used even hundreds of years after they have been proven and are known to be insecure.
People have known for centuries and centuries that communication channels are insecure, and that if you want any security, you have to encrypt the message, not the channel. You can't have secure channels. I mean, Caesar would have done it by killing the person who carried the message if he thought it was bad, but you can't have secure channels. You have to have open channels and secure messages.
Okay.
All right.
Open channels and secure messages. There we go. Okay, so the little diagram we had shows the way things are supposed to work. This is one of my favorite philosophers stating one of my favorite pieces of philosophy, that in theory there's no difference between theory and practice, and in practice there is. And so the here's some of the practical things that we know about cryptographic protocols. First of all, things can actually remain secure for a long time and then suddenly become completely insecure, right? Because somebody makes a discovery, like Al-Kindi had, about substitution ciphers. But news can actually travel slowly, and people may, the mere fact that someone has published a paper somewhere showing the insecurity in some method does not mean that everybody around the world will suddenly stop using it. And the third thing is, even knowing that secure systems are available doesn't mean that people will use them. Because people will look at something like what we put up on the first slide there and just say, wow, that looks like a hopeless jumble. Nobody would ever be able to figure that out. When in fact, the encryption method falls to, a very quick analysis once you know the